Send us your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah, we worship Allah and no one but Allah.
But from the other side, we see that the people, those who oppose this idea of yours, say that the humans have been born free on this world, and they're free to consume whatever, and the spirits say to experience whatever is possible in this world. Whether and these, we can say, types of labels like legal, illegal, lawful, unlawful are just something created by some people. It is not the order of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or the prophets or the imams or something like that. Does free life and having a free life help us to reach prosperity sooner than a person who is living religiously or not?
Yes, of course. We do believe that human beings are free. Mm-hmm. We are created as free, let's say, creatures. We do believe in the freedom. But the point is that sometimes because of misunderstanding, because of misconception of the purpose of life, the meaning of life, the, let's say, and because of these misunderstandings, sometimes we do not know what is the purpose of life, what is the meaning of life, what should we do in our life, you know? Like when you look at sometimes to the ignorant people, these ignorant people sometimes enjoy something that when you look at them, you really regret about them. Because of what? Because they don't know. If you make them know better things, yes, of course, they will forget about those things. They will come to you and will accept your ideas. That's why Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent us the prophets. That, oh human beings, sometimes you might make mistakes, let's say, dedicating your life to those kind of earthly pleasures, worldly pleasures, while there are more better kind of pleasures, more better perfections, more better values that you can achieve in your life. That's why the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent us the prophets. It was the prophets who taught human being from the beginning of the history of mankind that these are, for example, the good things for you and these are the bad things for you. And it is a kind of divinely decision made by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to guide us into the right path. Yes, yeah, sometimes we might, out of our ignorance, we might think that some things are good, but if someone come to us and explain that these are the things that these things that you are doing is wrong, and there are better options, there are, yes, better choices.
Okay.
If someone explain to us clearly that, we, yes, will accept and we will understand freely. Freely, we will understand that.
That's right.
That's why Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salatu wasalam says that I worship Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala freely, mm-hmm, based on my free will, mm-hmm, because I found Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala the one who deserves ibadah.
Yes.
Ibadatul Ahrar. Mm-hmm. This is the highest level of ibadah. I say that I do not worship you like ibadatul abid, this, mm-hmm, ibadah of servants.
Yes.
I do not worship you like ibadatul tujar, the traders, yes, for example. Only I worship you because I know that you deserve this worship. And based on my free will, I decide to worship you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not ibadatul abid. It is not ibadatul tujar.
Yes.
It is ibadatul ahrar.
That's right.
So based on free will, we can approach towards Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and freely decide to accept these restrictions in order to get better, let's say, choices, better pleasures, and better perfections.
Okay. And doesn't the putting the bans on the people and restrictions on the people make them more eager to do a special sin? You know, because if the people are banned from doing something, they become more eager or auspicious or, ambitious to do a type of sin. This is,
yes,
this is the,
yes, you're right.
Human.
You're right. That's why the whole Quran says that وَيُعَلِّمُهُمْ وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةِ.
Yes.
So this ta'lim is first. Mm-hmm. Ta'lim means that you have to teach the people. You have to make them learn,
yes,
the true things, the truth.
Okay.
And then yuzakki him, you know? Yuzakki is
them.
Purification, or, yes, purifying is after ta'lim.
Mm-hmm.
First, You have to tell the people, you have to teach the people, you have to explain the people the truth, the haqiqah.
Yes.
And then based on their understanding, their true perception, you can yuzakki him, you can purify them. Mm-hmm. Of course, without knowledge, without ma'rif, of course, purification cannot be successful, as you rightly mentioned.
Yeah.
But if you clearly explain each and everything to the people and make, and convince them that this is the true things, this is the right thing, then they would accept. Then they would enjoy of these restrictions. Do not think that it is something bad. It is something, for example, not interesting to them.
That's right. So all in all, we could say that the true recognition of the concept of ruh or spirit of a human being is only possible through knowing the religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, isn't it? If
yes.
Somebody wants to be familiar, and the ruh is very much different from the psyche, it's better to say, or mindset of a person. Maybe materialistically speaking, psychology and biology can help very much the people who are after a special interest, but religiously speaking, not.
You know, we cannot find the ultimate truth without divine, without heavenly guidance.
Yes.
This is something that is very much concrete and solid. I mean, you know, Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, as the creator of the universe,
yes.
He should guide us to the truth. And through the prophethood, through the messenger of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
Otherwise, it seems impossible mm-hmm. to find out the truth without heavenly guidance.
That's
it's really
right.
difficult.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. The compatibility between the religion of Islam and the soul of the human beings. Of course, nowadays we see so many complexities in the life of the modern people. They are getting back to the spiritual concepts, to religious teachings, because they feel the awakened place of, we can say, a kind of, as you said, soothing path to clean their soul, to purify the soul. So the religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the monotheistic religions can be a nice path for the people in order to solve the problems, especially the problems that they have, spiritually speaking. Thank you very much, Sheikh. It was very kind of you.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي تهران
روبا شابت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The vice chairman of Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf Party, Shah Mahmood Qureshi, and party's former secretary general, Asad Umar, have been arrested by the authorities after being accused of misusing a secret official document. Under the country's Official Secrets Act, on disclosing the contents of a diplomatic cipher for political gains, the counter-terrorism wing of Pakistan's Federal Investigation Agency registered a case against the two former federal ministers, along with ex-premier Imran Khan. Khan was sacked from power in April 2022 after he lost a no-confidence vote in parliament. Since then, he has been accusing the United States of hatching a conspiracy with the help of his political opponents and the military to remove him from power through a diplomatic cipher. Khan is currently serving 3-year jail sentence after a court found him guilty in a corruption case earlier this month. He has also been barred from taking part in politics for 5 years. Just moments before his arrest late on Saturday, the former Pakistani foreign minister Qureshi condemned what he called a widening crackdown on his party by the interim government. He said that his party will knock on the door of the country's top court to ensure that the elections be held on time in a free and fair manner.
It was unfortunate that PTI leaders were being arrested and then released after an announcement that they want to part ways with PTI. The caretaker Prime Minister has said that he will ensure transparent elections. I would ask him how he will do so in such an environment. I would request the Chief Justice of Pakistan and the Election Commission to take notice and ensure a level playing field for PTI.
Political analysts believe that the upcoming polls would be considered as one of the most controversial elections in the history of the country in the absence of one of Pakistan's popular political parties, the PTI.
The chief of PTI, Imran Khan, is in jail. The number two of that party, the vice chairman of PTI, is also arrested in the cipher case. So it looks that the PTI is going to be in a very disadvantageous position in the coming elections. The PTI also claims that thousands of its activists and political workers are in jail and they'll be tried in the military courts.
In the light of the possibility that the general elections may be delayed due to Election Commission of Pakistan's decision to hold new delimitations, major political parties strongly condemned ECP decision, warning that the unconstitutional postponement of elections could escalate into political instability and uncertainty.
According to the political commentators, if the current caretaker setup stretches beyond its constitutional tenure, a lingering period without an elected government could lead to military intervention in the cash-strapped country. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
In Italy, August is the time when millions of people take their annual holidays. The large majority of the Italians travel to their favorite destinations with their cars. But this summer, Italians are grappling with record high fuel prices that may affect their programs, with the cost of petrol reaching a new record high for the 17th consecutive day this month.
Our lawmakers in that building over there, they are fine in their government cars paid by us citizens. Fuel costs more than 2 euros per liter today. This is pure madness. There is no reason for these hikes. It's just speculation.
According to official data, the price of fuel with standard quality reached 2.019 euros per liter on the highways earlier this week. Petrol price at some service stations has even reached 2.7 euros per liter. The last time when prices were so high was in July 2022, following the start of the war in Ukraine. The country's industry minister, Adolfo Urso, has blamed the rise in the prices of petrol and diesel to policies adopted by the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, also known as OPEC.
Nessuno si sta ponendo il problema.
Nobody here is saying that the government's version is blatantly false. OPEC doesn't have anything to do with the spike in fuel prices seen in Italy. The truth is that huge amounts of crude oil are available these days, but our country simply doesn't have the refineries to process it. Each and every proposal to invest in new refineries is thwarted by the government's adoption of green energy policies.
The EU has imposed massive and unprecedented sanctions on Russia, as well as a ban on Russian oil imports over the war in Ukraine. This measure has severely affected the few refineries located in Italy.
Fuel prices affect levels of consumer confidence. According to Italy's Bureau of Statistics, Istat, the country's economic morale plunged sharply in July.
This thing is slipping out of our government's control. Everything costs 30 to 40% more. At this pace, we won't be able to go anywhere in summertime.
Italy's main farmers association, Coldiretti, has warned that in a country like Italy, where almost 90% of the goods travel by road to reach the shelves, the increase in fuel prices will result in sharp spikes, over 30%, in the cost of fruit and vegetables. Max Civili, Rome.
Religious leaders from more than 200 different spiritualities and 80 different countries gathered in Chicago for the Parliament of the World's Religions, the largest interfaith conference in the world. Since 1893, the organization has brought together people of faith who are committed to justice, peace, and spiritual growth. A key conference was Faith Over Fear, Countering Anti-Muslim Discrimination, which aimed to connect, equip, and energize all people of faith for anti-racist mobilizations or in anticipation of a looming Islamophobic incident.
In the United States, which is where our focus is, it is, in some cases, it comes in waves, but as we're now facing another presidential campaign cycle, we're keeping our eyes and ears open because we expect that anti-Muslim hatred will become part of the conversation in the public square, perhaps even in some of the political campaigns themselves.
In Sweden and Denmark recently, the Holy Quran was burned and defaced in appalling and unnecessary provocations, and with their governments refusing to intervene, sparking protests worldwide. Activists noted that if someone hates Muslims, they likely hate many others as well.
Not only do studies show that people that hold anti-Muslim views also hold anti-Semitic views, also views about immigrants and refugees, black and brown communities, and so we believe that in addressing anti-Muslim discrimination and violence, we're making an inroads to help people address other forms of discrimination and racism, especially within the United States, where our history of religious intolerance and racism intersect for Muslims.
The parliament is held every 2 or 3 years in different cities around the world, and it helps build relationships between people who typically wouldn't cross paths, and that has lasting positive effects.
When it comes to so many things are different from Islam, one of our core beliefs is that Allah made different type of people, and he specifically asked Muslims to go learn from the kind of people he made. They are all equal in Allah's eyes. We all are. So I would feel if I would be doing injustice if I did not talk to these people and learn about them.
Attendees said that seeing the range of the world's religious practices in one place, from Abyssinians to Zoroastrianism, produces awe, respect, and the recognition of mankind's indivisible unity amid a splendid diversity.
The Parliament is a reminder that faith isn't a barrier, but the inspiration for cooperation, and that humanity's collective global problems will be solved by people of faith continuing to work together. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Tehran has hosted a conference to discuss the effects of sanctions on the health of patients. Speaking at the event, Secretary of the Strategic Council of Foreign Relations Abbas Araghchi rejected the U.S. claims that medicine and food items are exempted from sanctions.
There might be such a thing on the surface, but in practice, the actions taken by the U.S. administration have imposed a strong sanction in this area. The U.S. sanctions against Iran cover a very wide network, and in addition to the humanitarian exceptions that they have apparently placed in the field of medicine, there are very detailed conditions by the Office of Foreign Assets Control of the U.S. Treasury Department in a way that makes their implementation practically impossible for pharmaceutical companies.
Many human rights groups have criticized the U.S. for cutting off banking ties with Iran through threatening the international banks with punitive fines by the U.S. Department of Treasury, which has led to a disruption in the accessibility of vital medical supplies for Iranian patients.
The most important report in this matter was submitted to the UN Human Rights Council last year by Mrs. Duhan, the special rapporteur on unilateral coercive measures of the United Nations. The U.S. and the West, self-proclaimed advocates of human rights, were against this report and even voted against the resolution to extend her mission. Even during her report presentation in September last year, they chose not to be present in the meeting hall. Self-criticism is not within their tolerance.
Although the U.S. claims that the sanctions do not directly ban the sales of medicines to Iran, they block every financial route needed to obtain drugs for patients suffering from diseases such as diabetes, kidney failure, hemophilia, multiple sclerosis, thalassemia, and leukemia.
Iranian officials have repeatedly condemned the sanctions against the Iranian nation as a crime against humanity, saying such unilateral restrictive measures have put the lives of vulnerable people at risk by hampering their access to medicine. Saman Kujurib, Tehran.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has vowed to address the pressing cost of living crisis plaguing the nation. Attributing the situation to the global economic downturn, Erdogan has assured that his government will swiftly resolve this issue while upholding his promises to the people impacted by the devastating Fethiye earthquake. He had previously pledged to complete the reconstruction efforts within a year.
We vow to tackle the escalating cost of living caused by global crisis. We are aware that the cost of living has been suffocating our nation recently. As we have solved every problem of our country, I hope we will solve this problem again. We will not neglect anyone's right and will not leave anyone's expectations unanswered.
Analysts argue that this whole economic crisis is the result of wrong economic strategies and decisions made by the same ruling government for the past years, and they cannot fix what they have done now.
The people who created the problem and don't see it as a problem are very unlikely to fix it. For this reason, it's a naive to expect from the creator of the problem to solve the problem. I don't know on what basis the president is making these promises. He spoke about the cost of living, which has been getting higher for the past 2 years. Every month, we have a new raises in prices from foodstuff to rents and fuel. When the new government came and Memi Şimşek was appointed, we waited for something positive to happen. But the lira value against US dollar is dropping, and we are not seeing any new investments in the country. So where are all the new policies they want implement?
A few weeks ago, the vice president said that a new economic plan is to be revealed in September that will have a positive impact on the life of citizens, production and market, saying this plan will increase investments in the country.
Turkey, after the pandemic, was facing a few economic issues, just like other countries in the world, struggling to encounter post-lockdown repercussions, and then came the devastating earthquake, and then elections. So what we are facing, from inflation to change in lira value, is normal to what country has been going through. However, I think the government's plan will ease the economic crisis, but it will take time, of course. When speaking about the economy, nothing can happen in one night.
This is why inflation is gaining a new momentum. The annual inflation went up from 38.2% to 47.8% in a single month in July. Lack of economic investments, inflation, low Turkish lira value against the US dollar, and high cost of living. This is how the Turkish economy is going now, with some blaming the pandemic and earthquake, while others say it is the government's wrong economic decisions. Amid the government promises and opposition criticism regarding Erdogan's extended tenure, there remains uncertainty regarding the potential success of the newly appointed economic team in swiftly executing their plans.
It's not that bad. Yes, the Turkish lira value has dropped and the cost of living has risen, but the government also raised the minimum wage and is trying to solve the economic problems which occurred due to the earthquake.
The ruling party must act fast to solve this economic crisis ahead of an upcoming critical local election, which will determine the fate of Istanbul, Ankara, and other major cities. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Around 800 delegates from 76 countries have arrived at the International Military Technical Forum held in Moscow region. Their presence showed a desire to strengthen and develop mutually beneficial cooperation with Russia, despite the West's anti-Russian sanctions. Addressing the participants, President Vladimir Putin noted that the U.S., along with NATO members, use all military and non-military means to pressure nations into submitting to their will, adding that all this is taking place amid a disintegrating arms control framework.
In particular, the United States intent on reformatting the existing system of interstate relations in the Asia-Pacific region as it deems fit. In fact, efforts to promote these so-called Indo-Pacific strategies are aimed at creating U.S.-led military and political associations. We cannot exclude that these efforts may pave the way to fully integrate NATO forces with the AUKUS structures as they take shape.
Putin stated Ukraine as a case which demonstrates where the Western policy of pouring oil on fire leads.
By pumping billions of dollars into the neo-Nazi regime and supplying it with equipment, arms and munitions, sending military advisors and mercenaries there, they are doing everything to further escalate the conflict and draw other countries into it.
According to the Russian defense minister, Ukraine's military resource is almost exhausted, and a special military operation has shown that there is nothing invulnerable to Russian weapons on the battlefield today.
No one should have any illusions that against the backdrop of a special military operation, Russian interests can be harmed. I wanted to draw attention to the fact that we also have cluster munitions in service. Until now, for humanitarian reasons, we have refrained from using them. However, this decision may be reconsidered.
This year, the forum is widely represented by weapons and military equipment that have already proven efficient in action. According to the Russian defense minister, the Russian army is expected to sign contracts worth over $4.7 billion at the forum. Iran has also presented a whole range of new combat drones.
Russia has expressed its determination to deepen technological partnerships and military technical cooperation with other countries and also continue taking advantage of the already established cooperation ties. The Army Expo's success is a clear indication that the West has lost most of its power in forcing countries to bend to its will. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
For the fourth time in 5 months, ex-President Donald Trump has been indicted and will be forced to stand trial, this time over alleged 2020 election interference in the state of Georgia. Ex-New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani joins Trump and nearly 20 others who will be collectively tried for violating a law normally associated with gangsters.
The indictment alleges that rather than abide by Georgia's legal process for election challenges, the defendants engaged in a criminal racketeering enterprise to overturn Georgia's presidential election result.
A conviction of racketeering in Georgia has a minimum prison sentence of 5 years. Polls have Trump as a certain lock to win the Republican presidential nomination, and he's neck and neck with incumbent President Joe Biden for next year's election. Trump has gained 8 points among Republicans and Republican-leaning independents since the first indictment was handed down, as the spate of court cases has many accusing the ruling party of persecuting political opponents.
I definitely think it's a witch hunt because, I mean, it's like crying wolf. How many times are they going to say he's indicted? And I just think, I do believe that it's also election interference. I believe that they really don't want him to run the establishment. I believe that they want to keep Biden in office.
A recent poll found that 12% of America says that the use of force is justified to keep Trump from winning the presidency, while 7% of Trump supporters say force is justified to restore Trump to the presidency.
I absolutely support it. And, I was just talking to my son yesterday when the fourth came through, and I'm like, you know, it's just hard for me to imagine that you could have someone, the leader of one of the world's best countries or used to be in the world, and he could try to overthrow a legitimate campaign vote. So, no, I'm all for the indictments.
The Georgia trial is the only of Trump's four indictments, which is likely to be televised. The indictments have often seemed timed to coincide to overshadow developments in the corruption allegations of Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden.
You know, we've been saying for a while that Trump is a criminal, and the issue is that we have a criminal system. So, Trump being indicted, we hope that he goes to jail. We hope that he goes to prison. I don't think that it's going to happen personally. But at the same time, you know, some of the people who are pushing these charges, you know, are also a part of this criminal system and also, you know, need to be held accountable for the things that they've done.
Trump's goal may be to delay the trials past the November 2024 vote, although he cannot pardon himself in the Georgia case, while Democrats are accused of slow-walking the investigations to tarnish Trump throughout the upcoming election campaign.
What the continued lawsuits make certain is that there will be no national reconciliation over the still disputed 2020 election, only further estrangement, and with no end in sight. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The European Union's refugee policy goes under the spotlight again in the European Parliament, being branded as illegal under international law and discriminatory. Refugees in European countries say those seeking asylum from Ukraine are receiving preferential treatment. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has covered this story. The European Union has been charged with implementing policies which discriminate between the refugees from Ukraine and those from Asia and Africa. European Union countries, which swiftly and comprehensively mobilized to help Ukrainian refugees following the outbreak of the Russia-Ukraine war in February of 2022, do not show a similar attitude towards those fleeing from other conflict zones, including Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, or conflict zones in Africa. Against this backdrop, numerous migrants froze to death or were pushed back while trying to cross the EU borders. This proves that the bloc violates the principle which entails the provision of humanitarian aid without discrimination. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, is among those who criticize this state of affairs. Filippo Grandi reiterated that black refugees who fled from wars and armed conflicts in Africa do not experience the same welcoming practices offered to their Ukrainian counterparts. Filippo Grandi added, "This is the ugly truth. Moreover, Human Rights Watch highlighted the double standards in Europe in treating refugees from Ukraine and refugees from Syria, Afghanistan, Palestine and Somalia." It also remarked that Bulgaria, Greece, Spain and Poland continue with their violent policies across their borders against migrants. In response to Anadolu News Agency's questions on the matter, Mohammad Shahada, Commission's director of the Geneva-based Euromed Human Rights Monitor, argued that the European Union's discrimination between refugees and migrants is becoming obvious day by day. Mohammad Shahada said, "For example, brutal practices against migrants from Afghanistan, Syria, Palestine and Somalia by countries like Denmark, Bulgaria, Greece and Hungary are overlooked by the European bloc." Mohammad Shahada added, "These practices are even possible with funding from the European Union." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. According to an official from a global rights group, European countries are closing their doors to those seeking asylum and endangering them by being involved in unlawful and illegal practices. Emily McDonnell, UK Advocacy and Communications Coordinator at Human Rights Watch, says, "Many European countries are closing their doors to people seeking their protection and engaging in very harmful, dangerous practices that are non-compliant with human rights laws or refugee laws and put people in grave danger." Emily McDonnell added, "Sentiments European countries harbour towards refugees were becoming evident and common." She said, "There certainly is a wave against migrants, and it is not something that is new, but it's certainly becoming more widespread, more obvious. The British government introduced new legislation against illegal migrants, calling for a ban on those who cross the English Channel by boat to claim asylum in Britain. The legislation also calls for detention of refugees and plans for their removal to their home countries or to Rwanda or any other nations which the UK deems safe. The human rights advocate dubbed the legislation a sweeping bill that strips most asylum seekers of appeal rights, only being able to appeal after they have been removed and sent or expelled to another country, as well as being unable to access Britain's modern slavery protection. Emily McDonnell added, "All of this legislation is part of a broader context in Britain, which is that the government is very much demonising and fueling hatred, fear and division against asylum seekers and migrants." She said it would be disastrous and have devastating effect on migrants, particularly people of colour, in the United Kingdom. Emily McDonnell added, "The highest number of people crossing the English Channel are those seeking protection from countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Eritrea, and places where persecution, wars and human rights abuses are rife. Asylum seekers cannot be returned to those countries as they are not safe. Very limited safe routes exist for individuals who want to arrive in the United Kingdom. Afghans were the highest number of crossing the channel in boats in the last quarter of 2022. But, Emily McDonnell said, schemes that the government set up for Afghans to travel safely are plagued with problems and not functioning properly. Also, Human Rights Watch has documented the awful and deplorable condition of asylum seekers in encampments, especially in northern France. Emily McDonnell termed the new legislation a breach of the UK's international obligation to the United Nations 1951 Refugee Convention. McDonnell said, "It is a flagrant breach of the United Nations Refugee Convention. It is not illegal to seek asylum, and it is irrelevant how a person arrives in the United Kingdom, whether they arrive through a regular route or whether they had to go by boat or in the back of a lorry or by foot, and the government is really fueling this in its rhetoric and stoking divisions. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. The British government has begun a shameful campaign of evicting thousands of Afghan refugees from hotels across Britain. The Afghans, which include families with young children, have been living in the hotels since their rescue from the beleaguered country in 2021. Now all 8,000 living in the so-called bridging hotels have been given notice and will be made to leave Home Office funded accommodation by the end of August. According to a local government association, one in five who have already been evicted presented as homeless to their local council as they struggled to secure private rentals during the UK's worsening housing crisis. Also, according to recent reports, the number of politically motivated attacks on refugee shelters in Germany has steadily increased since the beginning of last year, with 80 crimes reported in the first half of this year, mostly involving far-right activists. Following a parliamentary inquiry by the radical leftist opposition party, Die Linke, the German government said there are reports of 80 politically motivated crimes in the first half of this year in which a refugee shelter was the scene of the crime or the direct target of an attack. Of these, 74 were allegedly committed by right-wing suspects, with two offences related to the phenomena of foreign ideology. In one instance, the police classified the crime as a religious ideology. In the first half of the year 2022, the police recorded 52 politically motivated crimes against refugee shelters, with an increase of 71 in the second half of the year. According to the German government, 39 people, including four children, were injured in crimes committed against asylum seekers, refugees and shelters in the second quarter of 2023. Reacting to the latest figures provided by the government, the spokeswoman for the Left Party on refugee matters, Clara Bunge, called it alarming. Bunge said, "It is alarming that people who seek protection here experience violence, hostility and exclusion so often." She charged the far-right AfD party, as well as the Christian Democratic Union, the CDU of Germany, and its sister party, the Christian Social Union, the CSU, and with preparing the ground for racist mobilization against refugees through verbal attacks on the right to asylum.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in thy name we start. This is IRB English Radio and Youth Station. I am Asma.
And I am Vita here.
Yes, another episode in here, and I hope that you enjoy it. So wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and life is going so cheery, so smooth,
really?
And so happy. Memories are strange things.
They are.
And they're so complicated.
And they're so strong.
They're so strong.
You know, sometimes it's not about the visionary memories. Mm-hmm. It's about smells, colors.
Exactly.
It's about the feeling you had in that moment.
Yeah. I am the kind of a person who would even miss the kind of perfume you were using at a certain age of your life.
I'm that kind of person that I remember all of that.
Exactly. And I even miss the smell of the rain. And I wait for the autumn to come to smell that.
you're such a beautiful person. I like you. This is exactly like that. And sometimes memories are just some killers.
Some killers? They are true killers.
You know, sometimes you feel like you're getting trapped into these beautiful hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And they're like, come on, I know it's just in the past, but this is so real that I want to touch it again.
Exactly. I just feel like my brain is a box.
Yeah.
And I keep in this box all my beautiful memories.
Exactly.
And then sometimes, just as I go for them again and again and again, and I just rehash all of them, I wish to just bring them out of my brain. I want to bring them out and touch them.
Do you control this feeling? I mean, it should be controlled. There are sometimes that you really get drowned into your memories that you forget the time that you are being here and the time that you have the people around you, and they're like, you're not enough for you, and you're like, I know that you're enough, but you know, I'm just getting trapped.
I know what you mean. You know, and sometimes because memories equal the past.
Yeah.
Those people who think about memories too much are the kind of people who live in the past.
Yeah.
We can say somehow, at least, this is my point of view.
It is true.
And then people who live in the past, there's a big chance for them to forget about the present. And they're just not going to look at the future as well. They're just going to have their eyes backward. I mean, they're just going to look at the time that has been passed. Not the present and not the future.
And you know, sometimes I see some people who are exactly like that. They're living in the past, in their memories. And they claim that, no, I'm not living in the past. I'm just trying to rebuild the past. And this is the most hilarious thing that I've ever heard. And this is ridiculous because you're cheating in yourself. You are telling lies. You're lying to yourself, my dear. You know, because you are searching for someone in your new communications. And this is so sad. It's like kind of abusing people.
You know what, Bita?
Yeah.
I remember when we were at university. Well, our university had a beautiful campus. It was full of trees.
Hey, you told
and then
me.
In this backyard, which was a sort of a cozy place for me and my friends, we had a community in there.
Yeah.
We had a society of five personalities in there. And then some of the times, just as we were sitting there drinking coffees, we sometimes even lie down on the grass and then looked at the sky from among these trees that are above of our head. So sometimes, just as I was thinking, and I felt like so sad, and then my friend asked me, why do you feel sad? We're having so much beautiful times in here. And then I told her, just at this age, drinking coffee right in here with you guys and talking about these plays that we had at the class, it is so beautiful, but I know that I'm not going to have it ever again at this age. Even right now, when we talk together, I just tell them, you see how sad I was at those times? It was because I knew that I would never have that again.
Yeah.
And I have left a part of myself in those memories.
You know, this is what I feel a lot. You know, sometimes you feel really sad at the happiest times of your life.
Yeah.
Because you know it's not going to last forever.
Exactly. Because you know that the night would come and today is going to be just yesterday.
Exactly. And we have to go for a short break. Stay tuned, my dear listeners.
Life is all a beautiful memory in the end, you know?
Maybe.
Because when we, the moment that our soul is going to leave our body, there would be a moment that we would, all of our life is just going to flash back in front of our eyes, just in some moments.
Yeah.
So life is a memory.
It is. It is a snapshot that all the things that you did and all the people you met.
Exactly.
This is really interesting, even thinking about these things. But the thing which was really more interesting than that for me was that the first thing that came to our mind about memories was the beautiful things. I mean, the beautiful feeling and emotions that we had. But unfortunately, there is a really, really dark door here that you know, we didn't open. And this is the memories that we are running away from. The memories that we're trying to dig down in, in our brains.
The memories that I wish just like, you know, there was a feature that the vampires had. And I always wished to work those features on the bad memories, you know, the compelling thing. They did this eye thing, and then they compelled you into forgetting things or remembering things that you have never done in your life. So that feature, I just loved it so much because I wanted to use that for some bad memories to be erased from my brain.
Bad memories are like, you know, I don't know, they're like old scars. They don't hurt, but when you look at them, it's like...
They hurt.
Yeah, they hurt.
They really hurt.
It's a physical thing that they have. And you cannot just forget them, unfortunately. And if you try hard to forget them, this is a kind of really hell loop. You're going to get trapped in it. Mm-hmm. The more you try to forget bad memories, the more you will remember them.
Exactly.
This is really bitter.
And unfortunately, there's no way out of it. I guess there's no way for you to forget about all the bad memories. Yeah. They'd be always there. And it's there's a goodness in that, you know?
What it is.
You learn from them so much, and it gives you strength. When you look at yourself and you say, oh my God, what sort of things I have been through, and still I'm going so strongly. So it would give you this confidence that, yes, I can be something strong if I just trust my Allah. And then it would give you also this idea that no matter how many difficult things are going to get in my way, I have been through even the worst. So it's a kind of been there, done that sort of a story.
You know, and I think sometimes these sad memories are reminders. Reminders of what we did, what kind of mistakes we took in the past. And this feeling of regret is not all. It's not so bad. I'm really regretful about the things, some of the things that I did in the past. But it's not like if I go there, then I won't do them. I will do them again.
I will do them again, yes.
Okay. I'm regretful, but it doesn't mean that I won't do them.
Yeah.
And I think this is the
real thing. I usually say that whatever we do, maybe is the best thing that we can do at that moment.
Yeah.
Or at least we think it's the best thing that we're doing at the moment.
Maybe that was only your potential at that moment, you know?
Yeah.
It was all a thing. And we have
so, you know
it.
What, Pita? Why they say that you shouldn't leave with your memories?
You know,
why people usually say don't be kind of a past person?
I think the biggest reason is that we have a really strong urge to be addicted to the memories, to be really obsessive about memories. And, you know, you're like... they are so beautiful and they are so real. And there is this beautiful point in psychological concepts that they tell that a memory is about 50% true after a year. If you have a really beautiful memory in your mind, it doesn't mean that that accident at the past was exactly the same thing that you are remembering.
Exactly.
This is same at the same time and a bitter truth, but unfortunately,
the feelings are going to exaggerate about that
exactly.
memory.
Exaggerate and making some lies that even didn't exist.
Yeah.
You will have some feelings about your memory that didn't exist. And this is the danger, I think. Here.
Yeah, it is going to be so dangerous for
because
us.
Because you are manipulating your thoughts. And this is not something you can stop, but this is something which can destroy your life.
Well, as for me, I would say that if people say do not be a kind of a past person and do not live in the past, it's because just as you are trying to rebuild your past, you forget about your present and about your future. So if you do not live in the moment, you're going to lose all the capacities that today is offering you.
Exactly. You know, maybe there are some people just they're like, okay, I won't do anything. I'm just trying to rebuild my past. But I always have this point in my mind that regretting something you do is better than regretting something you didn't do. So if you are wasting your time doing nothing, you will regret it so sadly more than all of your sad
memories.
Yeah,
that's very true.
It is. So let's have a short break and we're going to come back.
Yeah.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So the sad thing I mentioned that sometimes you have to do something. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You have to do it because you want to run away from the past. Mm-hmm. And this is not a weakness.
Exactly.
You are a human being. You are alive. Yeah. You need sometimes to...
See, memories are so good
to
give you inspirations for future, to give you strength for the sad and difficult situations that you have been through, and you pass them perfectly.
Yeah.
So memories are good in the point that they would give you some extra visions for your future, and they would give you some ideas for your present. So if you look at them just as teachers and some lessons that you have been through, it's going to be good. But if you go through them as so kind of a sickness, as to get so much drowned in them, as though you're just killing yourself with them, they're just going to be like the poison.
Yeah, I do agree with that. That, you know, these memories are really precious because they're the source of maturity. Mm-hmm. I believe in that. If you feel like nowadays you're mature, nowadays you're not taking the same, making the same mistakes that you were making, it's all about your memories. I mean, you have to thank them.
But you know, life is just like a movie.
It is.
There are some scenes that you love them more than the others. The more scenes you have had, just as much as this beautiful scenes that you had in your past, you're going to have in your present, and you're going to have in your future. And also, you're going to have some bad scenes as well, some sad scenes as well. So it's a combination of all of them together. You cannot say that, okay, I'm going to think about one memory because I loved it so much and I wanted to keep repeating itself in my life. This is not going to be the way life works. We are travelers and it's a temporary travel. It's a journey that is going to end at a point. So I keep saying that all the time because... we have to remember this. Life is not going to be there forever. So it's all a memory. Yeah. All of it is just a moment, some moments of memories that we're going to see
at the
end.
You know what? The beauty of memory is that it's not repeatable. And this is the beauty of memory.
Exactly.
Now, because you cannot repeat it, it's beautiful. Because it's far-fetched. Because you cannot have it again.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there are some errors that our brain actually take. And you have to know these errors. For example, we tend to remember the good memories more than the bad memories.
Yeah. Okay?
And this is why we can hear from the old generation that, oh my gosh, the past days were amazing.
Good old days.
The good old days.
But then I have to say that, yes, you're right. They forget about the sad
the
things,
sad
the
days
bad
of
things.
Their lives. You know, sadness lasts more than happiness, but the memory of sadness will fade away sooner
exactly.
than happiness.
Exactly. Yeah, this because we tend to forget about them. We wish to forget about them.
Exactly. And even these memories that we're making Youth Station with each other are really precious for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The memories we have with each other.
Same in here, of course.
With our listeners. And I bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.